We head to Washington for our weekly look at the latest in Congress and national politics. The countdown to June 1st continues when the parts of the Patriot Act authorizing the NSA's bulk collection of phone data will expire. The Senate is set to vote on a bill that would modify that authority this week.
And there's more news from the campaign trail. Things are getting crowded in the Republican field as Rick Perry and Lindsey Graham have both signaled that they plan to announce they're running for president in early June. And yesterday, Hillary Clinton took questions from the press for the first time in about a month.
Joining us now is Ken Vogel, chief investigative correspondent for Politico. Ken, welcome to Central Time.
Hey, it's great to be with you guys.
Well, let's start with Hillary Clinton. First questions from the press, evidently in a month. Is that being taken as a sign that she's been dodging the press in any way?
Well, in fact, the way that she frames it is that she wants to talk to voters and that she is focused on talking with regular folks. And in the course of one of these small roundtables that her campaign had set up, in fact, one of the reporters who was following her around with this giant pack of reporters tried to interject and ask a question, and she had really an offhanded, almost dismissive response where she said, you know, I'm focused on talking with these people. Maybe I'll talk to you after I'm done. I'll take it under advisement. And all the regular voters who were sort of handpicked to come and attend kind of got a chuckle out of it. But the press got its hackles up a little bit and, you know, took a stand and made clear that they really wanted to have a chance to ask her some questions. So she took some questions. I think it's going to be a struggle for the next 538 days or whatever it is until the general election, assuming that she is the Democratic nominee. And we're going to have a lot of this tension between her campaign and the media pack that follows her.
A lot of the questions that did get asked focused on her use of a private email account while at the State Department. This week, a federal court said that waiting until January of next year, too long a wait. Clinton says she wants those emails released by the State Department as soon as possible. Are these emails a challenge, a roadblock for her campaign?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And it is horrible timing for her. She would prefer to just rip the Band-Aid off and get all this stuff out there now while we in the media are paying a lot of attention and are really anxious for any additional information about this controversy. But voters are paying a lot less attention. And so were these emails to come out now and all the news stories that would be based on the combing through these emails to come out now, it would be preferable to her because she could sort of get it behind her. Instead, it's these emails, if this court order holds, are going to come out just in the weeks before the Iowa caucus, which is really when folks are going to be, for the first time, tuning in an intensive way. So, too, will these congressional hearings about the Benghazi attacks be delayed until much closer to the sort of official beginning of the campaign? In both these instances, she would rather get these things over with. It extends the life of these stories and then gives them renewed life when there are, in fact, developments at the least opportune moment for her.
For Hillary Clinton's critics and maybe potential primary opponents, runoff opponents, is there a wish list? Are there things that they're hoping to see in these emails that would be particularly potentially damaging to her campaign?
I think there's just this general question about the confluence between her foundation's work, money contributions to her family's foundation, payments to her husband for speaking fees and maybe other business relationships, and her work as Secretary of State. We've already seen a few examples of this. Obviously, there was the book by the conservative author Peter Schweitzer that made allegations that these donations and these payments to her husband or to the foundation were influencing her time and her direction of the State Department while she was Secretary of State. Of course, we haven't seen any definitive evidence of that, but what we have seen from these emails and what we expect to potentially see is more information that kind of gets at this confluence. And we saw a story in the New York Times just this week about emails from this private account showing that Hillary Clinton was accepting advice from Sidney Blumenthal, a former advisor to her president, who was on the payroll of the Clinton Foundation, who was advising her on the situation in Libya as he was working with companies that were seeking to get in on reconstruction work in Libya. So there you see the blurring of the the business lines, with the political, with the official government service, with the foundation. I think that's the kind of thing that Republicans and critics certainly hope is sort of borne out and fleshed out by these emails.
Talking to Ken Vogel, chief investigative correspondent for Politico, about the top political news stories going on this week in national politics. Let's go to the other side of this presidential race, Ken. The Republicans, two new candidates, well, two candidates of the future, announcing that they would announce their runs in the near future, Rick Perry, Lindsey Graham. Why this pre-announcement? Why announce that you're going to announce?
Yeah, this is sort of part of the kabuki theater that we now see around launching presidential campaigns. There are a lot of campaign finance implications. If you do launch your campaign, you have to set up a campaign committee. You're limited in what you could do in terms of raising money, and you're limited in your ability to interact with this unlimited so-called soft money that the super PACs and the other outside groups are able to raise. So it behooves you to put off actually officially announcing your candidacy and beginning your campaign as long as possible. We see that in a way that sort of defies credulity at this point with Jeb Bush, who, from a lay perspective, clearly is running for president, but nonetheless continues to insist that he's not. Campaign finance watchdogs say this is sort of defies the spirit of these laws that are set up to ensure that candidates, officially declared candidates, are not able to participate in this sort of big outside money fundraising that Jeb Bush is very much involved in and taking great advantage of.
Now, I think a lot of people suspected that Rick Perry was going to run again. Lindsey Graham maybe not gotten as much attention, but he's from South Carolina, an early primary state. In a crowded field, could that help him stand out?
Yeah, absolutely. And this is really, in some ways, Republicans' worst nightmare, that they would have such a crowded field with so many candidates who, you know, some of whom are credible, some of whom are less credible, but are going to take shots at and maybe damage the credible candidates who are more likely to eventually come through the process with the party's nomination. We saw this, of course, in 2012 with Newt Gingrich and Rick Santorum continuing to hang on to the specter of their candidacies and really taking shots at Mitt Romney, dragging him to the right in some ways in a way that hurt his eventual chances of in the general election versus Barack Obama. I mean, in this case, with Lindsey Graham and Rick Perry, you're seeing, certainly with Lindsey Graham, maybe a little less so with Rick Perry, the chance for a really robust debate around national security and foreign policy issues with a true hawk neoconservative champion like Lindsey Graham going up against Rand Paul, another more viable candidate potentially, but one who is more from the libertarian Tea Party wing of the party that espouses a much more non-interventionist foreign policy and a much more civil liberties-focused domestic national security policy. Lindsey Graham and Rand Paul have already gone at it over some of these issues, and I think we can expect to see a lot more of that over the course of many months if Lindsey Graham really gets into the race.
Well, that hawk versus civil liberties split there takes us to our next story. This one from Congress. The Senate getting ready to vote on the USA Freedom Act, passed by the U.S. House already. This would modify the NSA's authority to collect bulk phone data. What's the likelihood of that passing on the Senate side?
It seems rather unlikely at this point. Our sources who track these votes think that it's probably not going to pass, and that will potentially play into Mitch McConnell's hands, the Senate majority leader, who wants to pass just a straight extension of the Patriot Act that doesn't have these provisions in it that dial back the NSA's ability to collect this bulk data. So he would prefer to have the fight now, have the vote fail, and then be able to pass an extension of the Patriot Act. He might not even get that chance to have the vote in the first place for a while, because Rand Paul, the aforementioned civil libertarian, is on the floor right now doing what his office is calling a filibuster. There's actually no vote up, so it's technically not a filibuster, but nonetheless, he is using the platform to make a point that he thinks that not only is the Patriot Act sort of too much of a violation of civil liberties and giving the government too much control to eavesdrop on private citizens, but he doesn't even think that these more modified dial back provisions in this USA Freedom Act are sufficiently non-intrusive, he would rather see a vote on the Patriot Act that opposed the extension of the Patriot Act on its merits. And this is another example of a really robust debate that we haven't seen for a while, not just on the Republican side, but really throughout the American body politic on this balance between national security and civil liberties. I mean, we're seeing a debate about the justification for war with Iraq again. It really is sort of like deja vu from 2008 with Hillary Clinton and Jeb Bush debating, you know, sort of reframing their original opinions in support of the justification for war. So it's after a long period during which these issues kind of faded from the fore in the political debate, they are right back up there again in everyone's face in a way that's probably healthy to have this kind of debate on.
I was going to say, Ken, a lot of times we gripe about the presidential race starting earlier and earlier, but in this case, it's putting a spotlight on issues that that maybe are worthy of this kind of robust debate.
Yeah, that's right. And Hillary Clinton, I mean, I covered her campaign in 2008 and can't even count the number of times that she was asked about her decision to vote in favor of the authorization of the war in Iraq, and kind of parried the questions and deflected and never really admitted her Democratic Party, her sort of perspective of the Democratic Party, that it was a mistake from that point of view. Now she is admitting that it was a mistake, and she says she regrets it. Jeb Bush was sort of stumbled over the same question recently and said that he would have voted for authorization. Now he's saying, no, he misunderstood the question. It's not quite that simple. You have Marco Rubio, Lindsey Graham, folks who are more overtly identified with the hawkish wing of the Republican Party, saying, oh, yeah, we would vote for it. And it is really a healthy and robust debate.
And we'll leave it there, Ken. Thanks a lot for joining us today.
Hey, thank you.
That's Ken Vogel, chief investigative correspondent for Politico, in our weekly look at the latest in national politics.